This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Since COVID-19's appearance in the United States in March, possibly earlier, there have been many comparisons to other epidemics. The 1918-1919 Spanish flu is the big one, but people have also invoked swine flu. What about another airborne illness with deadly effect? Tuberculosis. There was a time when the White Plague, as it was called, was the scourge of American public health, resulting in 25% of all deaths in New York City, and it was the third most common cause of death nationwide at one point. So how did Michigan respond to tuberculosis, and what can we learn from that experience? The Michigan History Center's Rachel Clark joins us now to talk more about this. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
So TB is a lung infection, right?
It is. It is a bacterial infection that affects mostly the lungs. It can affect other parts of your body, but it would settle for the most part in your lungs.
And this is going to sound familiar. It can be communicated amongst humans by airborne droplets, which people aspirate.
Yes.
When did it begin showing up in Michigan?
It's been around for a very long time, but initially it wasn't known what it was. Health officials at first thought it was hereditary, and so there was not much treatment to be had. But in 1882, a German doctor named Robert Koch discovered that it was actually airborne, and it was not hereditary. It was spreading, as you said, through things like sneezing and coughing and talking. And so then after that, treatment changed quite a bit. But initially, there really wasn't a whole lot that the health department did because they just didn't understand what it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, at what point did Michigan first start addressing care and treatment for TB?
Pretty quickly. In the 1880s, after Koch's discovery and his report on that, Michigan's Board of Health, which was the precursor to the current Michigan Department of Health, they started looking at how to communicate this to the public and how to educate. The Board of Health initially was very limited in what they could do. Education was their big focus. And so what they put together were programs to let the public know how to avoid spreading. So they had lots of pamphlets and information pieces about spitting in public, which, you know, today is really disgusting to think about, but a lot of people chewed tobacco back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just spitting in public was very common. So the things that we hear today with COVID are very similar to what the Board of Health was putting out back in the 1880s and 1890s when they started approaching the public about how to stop the spread of tuberculosis.
So it sounds like it was just sort of a spread the word informational campaign kind of thing.
It was. Yes. Yeah. Most of the things coming out of the Board of Health in the late 19th century, that's what it was, because they didn't have the power to do anything else. And education was incredibly important to them. So that was their approach initially. Nothing's changed after the turn of the century a little bit. You start to see hospitals built specifically for TB patients. You also see more public interest in it and groups that appear that help the Board of Health. So things do change in the early 20th century in terms of what the Board of Health is trying to do.
Well, can I ask, the informational campaign efforts, were they successful?
To a point, they were targeted to a very particular audience. And so if you look at the posters and the flyers and things, they're all in English. So English speakers are going to be the only audience that's going to be able to understand them.
And literate English speakers.
Yes, and literate English speakers. So the audience that was actually getting targeted with a lot of the print campaigns are going to be your upper middle class English speakers and readers. So I don't know that they intended it to be as limiting as it was. I don't know if they really thought about it. It's not something that would have occurred to them necessarily, but the print campaigns were successful to, I think, the audience that could read it and understand it, but they were very, very limited in terms of the people who are truly suffering from tuberculosis, which are going to be your poor, lower class immigrant populations that are crowded into cities throughout not only Michigan, but the United States. So the print campaigns were pretty limited.
I know from reading some of the materials of the time that Detroit caught some flack for how it was allocating resources.
Mm-hmm.
The area of town called Delray was very working class. And there were prominent doctors who were saying, listen, you're just not putting the effort where the disease is at its worst. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the resources that were allocated by the state and by the Board of Health were sent to individual either municipalities or local health departments. And so it was really up to them to figure out where the greatest need was. And at that time, Detroit focused its resources on the neighborhoods that it chose, but the poorer and middle class and immigrant neighborhoods didn't get those resources. So the spread of tuberculosis wasn't being slowed or stopped because it really just wasn't hitting the people that it needed to. So Detroit did catch some flack. The city of Detroit at that time did get criticized by state health officials because they weren't hitting the population that really needed the resources. And tuberculosis continued to spread like wildfire through certain neighborhoods.
Rachel, it kind of sounds like even though it wouldn't have been called that in this time, like there was an awareness of equity in healthcare and who gets treatment and who doesn't, even if it wasn't named as such. Is that a correct read on this?
From what I've seen, I would agree with that. Absolutely. If you look at historically, and when I say historically, I mean over the last couple thousand years, when there is a plague or there is a pandemic or any major health crisis, there is a group that's blamed. And it's typically a group that is othered in some way, whether it is an immigrant group or a religious minority. And a lot of times the reason that they are considered part of a problem is, as I said, the information that is put out to help the population is not translated to any of those people. So it is easy to other them and to set them aside and blame them for the spread in their own neighborhoods or in their own communities. And this continues well into the 20th century, that there is always a group. It's almost considered that it's their own fault that they're suffering because of something about them. And so this is true at that time as well. So equity in healthcare is really determined by who allocates those resources and who receives those resources and how helpful those resources are. And it is an enormous problem through the healthcare system in the early 20th century and continues to be a problem with healthcare systems throughout the country.
Looking at the press clippings of the time, it feels as though there might have been a little bit more united effort, at least nominally, to pull together and fight tuberculosis. I mean, there were political cartoons about this. There were the public education campaign, you know, really called on people's sense of public spirit. It feels like such a contrast to the political divide over COVID at the moment. Am I reading this right, or were there people who, you know, kind of poo-pooed the epidemic?
There were people who poo-pooed the epidemic, but I think you're right. There were a lot of efforts put into, especially as you get in a little bit further into the 20th century, pre-World War I, you do get cartoons and things that are a little more accessible or translatable to different assets of the population. So you get education policies for kids because kids were suffering and carrying tuberculosis. And so it was important to teach them how to avoid it. So you do get a campaign that it is a little more successful in the 10s, in the 1910s, and there is more of a camaraderie behind it because by then it's becoming pretty clear that it isn't about class, it isn't about immigrant status, it isn't about anything other than the fact that people, their living conditions and their behaviors are putting them in a position where they're catching tuberculosis and spreading it. It has nothing to do with anything else. And so there is more concerted effort after the turn of the century to communicate that a little differently.
Rachel Clark is with the Michigan History Center. Rachel, thank you so much for your time on this.
Thank you very much.